Good morning and welcome into Big Talk, college sports with a Midwest perspective, blue collar and blue blood. I'm Dalton Shetler. That's Sam Sprunger over there. Sam, how are we doing?
The top of the morning to you.
Yeah, you like the little hat Bill Graham? Well, I was looking too. I think my hat's a little crooked, so I was trying to straighten it out while
the
being
camera
classy.
Always screws, you know, with my hat. You know, I'm always like, it doesn't look right, but yeah. It's Friday. It's almost football Saturday, but then we've got high school football still kind of going. It's a great weekend.
Yeah, no, it most certainly is. There's a lot to look forward to. There's a lot to recap too, because last week was one of those throws that in the middle of a boxing ring, you're like, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. Like it just was one of those where you were kind of caught off guard. This upcoming week, by the way, we were just talking before we hit the airwaves. The football slate for the Big Ten this week is not the sexiest by any means.
Seems like a bye week.
It kind of. Yeah, you have Ohio State at Wisconsin. And it feels like we've had a few of these bye weeks.
Yeah,
but you have
yeah.
Ohio State at Wisconsin. Buckeyes, 14.5-point favorites. Purdue goes to Nebraska. Maryland goes to Northwestern. Indiana goes to Penn State. Penn State favored by 32 in that one. Michigan State will go to Minnesota. But like we said, there were some things that took place, some results that we kind of want to go back to from a week ago. So there's a couple games I think we want to talk about. Let's start with the one that made me happy is the wrong word, because I don't necessarily delight in somebody's pain, but let's use the word fascinated me and entertained me. That would be Iowa, Minnesota. Yeah. And if you missed this one came with a heavy dose of drama, because there was about a minute and a half to go. Minnesota punts the ball away. Minnesota's leading 12-10. They're punting from near their own end zone. Cooper DeJean, who is one of the best players in Big Ten football, one of the best defensive players in the country. Go ahead,
Sam. And let me say, he's going to know how to do this, what yeah. he's accused of doing. So I'm jumping prematurely. He knows what he's doing when it comes to punt returning. Go ahead.
So he's around midfield, and the punt was short. So he's running after the ball. He's pointing at the ball, kind of waving his arm down below, saying, get away, get away, get away. So his teammates get away. The ball takes a hop. He picks it up off the hop, breaks about three tackles right away, and then was gone to the house. Iowa goes up 16-12. The place explodes at Kinnick
Stadium.
There's
no way Minnesota's winning.
Yeah. Like that was the ball game. Like it had all the feelings of it. And then just a couple seconds after the celebration, the touchdown, here comes a flag and here comes a review. And they determined that he had an invalid fair catch signal, that when he was waving his arm telling teammates to get away, that counts as a fair catch signal. And so Iowa ends up getting the ball. Nothing happens. And Minnesota wins the game and wins the Floyd of Rosedale 12-10. This has been still stewing about a week later, full of drama, where people are still arguing about this one and still upset about it. Sam, what do you say?
It's pretty simple. Like I said, for one thing, he knows he's an experienced returner. He knows how to put his hand above and wave for a fair catch. That's the signal. The hand has to go above the head and signal that he's fair catching it. The incomplete sign, that what I'm positive, every returner knows how to do, that's not even close to over his head. Mm-hmm. Those referees should be reprimanded for that, because at no point did I see his hand go up over his head and signal for the traditional fair catch. It doesn't matter. You have to raise your hand like you're in class and then wave it above your head trying to get the teacher's attention. That's essentially what you're doing. And at no point did I see him do that. The referees screwed this one up.
And so I lean more like you did. I watched it and I watched it and I watched it back. And unless this is going to become one of those things, it's just not as frequent where I'm like, what is a catch? Like, you know how, like, we've all watched football for 40 years and we'll watch a game and we're like, okay, what kind of technicality are they saying he was unable to pull in that catch? Like, it kind of feels like one of those, because there have been some referees that have spoken out since, and they're like, well, they are technically correct, but they definitely should have thrown the flag sooner. They should have blown it dead right away, which also agreed. But I'm like, just watching it from a pure fan, pure football perspective, like, it to me is one of those things, like, how
it's a play we've seen many times before.
Yeah. Like, it beckons to me much of that, what is a catch? Well, what is a fair catch then? If it's not hand above the shoulder, waving the arm, if that's not it, what is a fair catch?
Well, and it's my understanding that that's universally been the signal. Like, yeah, it's not like, oops, we modified it and they got a year to, you know. No, it's always been hand above the head, wave it around. So you're signaling to the referee and all the defenders coming at you that you have to leave me alone to catch this ball. Then I'm done. I can't run. At no point did he do that to where people thought he was fair catching. I'm sorry. If you're arguing, yeah, he did, I don't know how. I don't know how, mm-hmm. what your justification is to saying that, yeah, that was a fair catch.
No, because your arms always move to some degree when you're running. Like, this is, it's such a weird distinction to make in this scenario. And so, like, that's one angle or one layer with this whole game to kind of unfold, because everybody's still pretty worked up about it because it was a pretty big call. But yeah, one of the things that, like, absolutely tickles me about the Iowa football experience is that, well, that, but, like, to me, and I think it was actually said on Shutdown Fullcast, which is a podcast I listen to frequently, but it was observed much like I did that. So the punt gets called back, right? There's a minute and a half to go. The ball's at like the 47, 48 yard line, I think, of their own. They're only down two and they have timeouts.
They should have been able to drive down and kick a field goal.
Realistically, you need 15 to 20 yards for a potential field goal. And there wasn't a soul watching that game or in that stadium that even believed that was a possibility. Like, it was once the officials brought that ball back, it was like, well,
we're done.
There's the game. Like,
we can't drive 20 yards, kids. Come on.
I mean, and like, we're saying it kind of like in cheek and tongue because it's funny, but like, that was the real feeling. Like, nobody gave Iowa a possibility of winning that game because they're like, well, 20 yards in a minute and a half, that cannot be
this
done.
This is tragically comical. Like, I really think it's tragically comical because you literally just set it up. They're 53 yards away from the end zone. 53 yards away from the end zone. They only needed to go maybe 25 just to ensure.
They have a good kicker.
And they have a good kicker. So literally 25 yards. If you can't muster 25 yards in a minute and a half with all your timeouts, how in the
world? And the beauty is, you know what happened that drive? The play sequence was first down, a sack, second down, incomplete, mm-hmm. third down, interception, mm-hmm. ball game. Yep. I mean, it is so, it is fascinating was the word I used earlier. I'll just continue to use it. Like, it's the car crash you can't look away from.
Yeah. It's an awesome situation. And that's, a lot of people use kind of the connotation of awesome as only good. No, awesome can be bad too. It can be tragic to look true. At. Something it's that's true. Awesome is just awe-striking. To see a team like Iowa with such a fantastic defense lose a game 12 to 10 because they can't drive 25 yards to kick a potential game winning field goal. That is awesomely tragic and comical.
We're at a point where Army has more passing yards than Iowa.
And that's absurd because they run a triple option. They run a triple option. They pass the ball like four times a game.
It is something else to, and honestly, like,
and this isn't bag on Iowa. It's just, this has been coming so strongly since last year that it's to the point where we can't stop talking about it now.
Well, and to me, like, especially we were talking about this before we started the show, to me, this is such a, monotonous, maybe is the best word, year of Big Ten football, where like week in, week out, like for the most part, we know the results. We know Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State are the good teams. Whatever else happens kind of happens. Like it's kind of just dragging along that way.
Yeah.
And right there with the spotlight on them, at least in my experience, is the Iowa Hawkeyes, because how can you not jump in on this experience? Like the things that are happening in their games are so absurd. Mm-hmm. Like it's as a neutral observer, if you're not a fan of Iowa, this is one of the most, I mean, I maybe it's just awesome is the experience to describe.
It's fascinating. It really awesome, is. And it's not necessarily fascinating and awesome in a fantastically great way.
It is so it's bewildering at times. Too. Yeah.
So many emotions that Iowa puts us through, and we're not rooting for or against Iowa, but they put us through so many emotions that it's like, what in the world are we watching? And this is a 2-year experiment since, I mean, it started going downhill 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
But like last year and this year have just building bricks on top of one another of such travesty.
And to your point, I don't sit there and root for them to lose or really to win. Mm-mm. I just revel in how unique this team is and what they do. Like it's an experience to make sure you're watching throughout the rest of the year.
I was doing a PA for a Division III university here in town when this game was going on, and I kid you not, I looked at the score and started laughing for a good 20 seconds because I'm like, of course Iowa only scores 10 points.
The over under was set at 30.5, which Brett McMurphy had tweeted was the lowest over under in 20 years. Only hit 22. Like at what point
touchdown away? Like
the over under is going to be in the 20s at some point.
It has to be. It has to be. It has to be, because you know what, Iowa can't put together multiple drives unless they're scoring on defense. They're not putting 20 points on the board. They're just not.
It is something else. But okay, so we've talked a lot about Iowa. There were a couple other big games here, but it's the one. I'm telling you, it's the one game like each week that I'm like, where does Iowa play? I want to watch that game. And like, I'll tell some people that, and they're like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I'm like, well, maybe I'm just a college football sicko, just like the group on Twitter. But
button for punishment.
I'm telling you, it's a wild ride to watch and observe. Let's go.
It's a roller coaster every week with Iowa.
And there's always something different. Like they were going to win the game on a punt return, and it was called back because of an invalid fair catch signal. And then
they couldn't drive 25 yards.
We just folded it in on the idea that they could go 15 yards in a minute and a half. Like it's amazing.
And you know what? Their kicker should still be considered for Heisman.
The punter. Torrey Taylor. Well, and by the way, okay, so before we put a bow on the Iowa conversation, because it brings up a good point, if you look at the rest of the way for Iowa's schedule, I have a hard time, and look, we're going to talk Penn State, Ohio State here in a minute, but wrapping up this conversation, I have a hard time not seeing Iowa in the Big Ten championship game, and I know we talked a little bit about this last week, but still. Wisconsin right now has the inside track. They only have one loss in the Big Ten. It was to Iowa. Iowa's lost twice, but Wisconsin still has Ohio State on the schedule. Matter of fact, that's this weekend. I don't like the Badgers' chances in that game. So if that puts them at two losses, then they're tied with Iowa. But here's Iowa's remaining schedule. They're on a bye this week, which makes me so sad.
Yeah.
So sad.
Yeah, we won't be able to see them win with 11 points.
They go to Northwestern next week.
Should be a win.
Should be a win. They host Rutgers. Should be a win.
Should be, but you know what? Rutgers isn't playing terribly.
I'm not saying you chalk it up right now, but it should be a win. I would take
Minnesota
Iowa.
That should have been a win too.
No argument. hosting Illinois after that.
And I tell you what, Illinois is playing better since they lost to Purdue. They're playing a lot better football. They lost to Wisconsin, but for a majority of that game, they were in it and ahead for a good portion of it too. So they're playing better football.
I want to talk about that game in a minute too. And then Iowa finishes at Nebraska. So those are the four games remaining.
And remember, like, last year for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Iowa absolutely could win all four of those. But even if they lose one, to me, Wisconsin isn't good enough to just lose to Ohio State and win the rest out. Like,
you think they're going to stumble somewhere else?
I don't think they're that good of a team.
Yeah.
Like from watching, I had bigger expectations for them heading into the year. And, well, and everybody thought
their passing game was going to be a world better.
And it just hasn't been there. So, which has been maybe one of the most confusing things to me, because I really thought with getting Tanner Mordecai, like I thought they were going to be able
to turn the page.
Yeah. I really thought there was going to be some success there, and it just hasn't happened for them. Yeah. But so anyway, let's get to Penn State, Ohio State, because we're 16 minutes in and this was the big game, right? So in Columbus, Ohio State gets the win against Penn State 20-12. But this game, from watching it, didn't feel like it was this close. I like Ohio State dominated this game as much as you can with only scoring 20 points. The Penn State offense, really, as you kind of like start to break things down, was just non-existent. And that's really what this was. Like, I think we saw two elite defenses play in this game. I think Penn State's defense played really well, and Marvin Harrison Jr. made a couple of special plays because he might be the best player in college football, especially with Brock Bowers being out for Georgia. Like, to me, Marvin Harrison Jr. might be the best player in college football. And Ohio State was able to make enough plays there on that side where Penn State could not manufacture a single thing. And I still believe Penn State is talented, but I do believe this is one that I've seen a lot of criticism fall on James Franklin and the coaching. And I to me, it's kind of hard not to to side that way as well, because watching that game, there were no pass attempts downfield. There were, it just showed no creativity. There was no intent to stretch the field vertically. There was no intent to really stretch the field side to side. Everything was kind of kept between the tackles, and there was nothing really there. And for Penn State on offense, outside of Olu Fashanu, the offensive tackle, like, your best playmakers are your two running backs, Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton. And each one got 9 carries each. Like, to me, especially if you're not taking shots downfield, you've got to get the ball to those playmakers and find ways for them to make plays. And none of that happened in this game. And that's how, like, I sat there and watched it, and it drug on forever because there was nothing over there.
Well, it made you wonder what Penn State's game plan was offensively. Was it, hey, we're going to beat them with what we know how to do? But the thing is, it didn't seem like they were doing what they knew how to do. Was it because Ohio State's defense was just taking that away? You don't really know, because, you, like you said, the running backs only got 9 attempts each. That's 18 plays out of however many they played or snaps they had. That shouldn't be that way. Like, why are you changing something that obviously hasn't broken until this point? And honestly, you don't know whether it is broken still, because they didn't try. When you've got those backs, you've got to, you know, I mean, yeah, you've got to stretch it a little bit. You've got to stretch the field a little bit to open up the middle.
Yep. That wasn't happening. Right. That's what, like, I just watched it with questions just in my head the whole time.
You've also got to stretch it east and west so the middle opens up.
Yep.
And if you're not doing that and you're playing everything in between the tackles, why in the world would Ohio State worry about the outsides when all you're doing is coming right up the middle?
Yep.
You know, I mean, Penn State, I still contend that Penn State's, and maybe not right up there now, but like, they're still on par with both Ohio State and Michigan right now. They only lost a game by 8 points. You're right. It didn't seem like it was that close. But all in all, at the end of the day, they only lost by one possession, and it was still, you know, it was still there. Things can be changed, but why weren't you trying? I mean, this is the these are the games, if you've got anything in your pocket, you do pull a couple of things out to try to mess with Ohio State and get them second guessing on themselves. Even a great team can still be forced to second guess themselves on what they're doing and make adjustments that maybe aren't the best for their team. And Penn State was doing nothing to try to get that to happen.
Well, and I feel like, and we've talked about this, but the gap talent-wise between Penn State and Ohio State hasn't been this close in so long.
Right.
Like Penn State is fairly on a similar plane in terms of talent.
And that's what I'm saying. They're on par this year.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And so to see that game where they're just – there were no doors opening in any kind of way to give that offense opportunities, it was kind of bewildering to watch.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and from what we'd seen, and don't get me wrong, they played the likes of, you know, as much as we poo-pooed it earlier, they played Iowa. They're a top team. They shut them out. They blanked.
It was hard to spin that one like you did.
Correct. But they beat Iowa 31-0. That's a defense that is a very good defense. Maybe not as good as the Michigan and Ohio State defenses,
yep,
but they still put 31 points on them. You expected the shutout part because Iowa doesn't play offense, but the 31 is what, you know, I expected more of a 17-14, 17-0 to where they were able to squeak enough points out to obviously win comfortably, but 31-0 against, yep, an Iowa defense to put up 12 points against Ohio State. You should expect more, you know. You should.
Yep.
And it just doesn't seem to me that they were being trustful of what had gotten them to that point up to this point of the season. And I don't think it's all dead yet, because I think they could still do something against Michigan. And that's the game that I assumed if they were going to win one of those two, Michigan would be the one. Now it's going to be hard because they've got to go to the Big House, I believe, don't they? Or do they host them this year?
They host them.
Okay. So that's even better, you know, thing for them is they get to host Michigan, and so they can still make better on what they're doing. I'm pretty positive that they are hosting.
I started to leak confidence after, yeah, I said that. I don't know if you saw that on my face.
I did.
I'm pulling that up, but just to make sure, yes, they do host Michigan.
Yeah. So I mean, it's one of those that they're not completely dead, but goodness gracious, to have some pride in what you've got, what's gotten you there. And trust that you're on par with Ohio State, that you could, that game could have been markedly different, I think, if they would have trusted in what got them there up to that point. They just seemed very cautious at what they were doing.
And I'm with you. I don't believe that Penn State season is done by any means,
right,
because I think they could beat Michigan because they match up differently with Michigan too than, mm-hmm, what they match up with Ohio State. But it certainly will take some adjustments from just a game plan perspective. And look, like, I mean, you and I, we watch a lot of football. We know football. We played it. You coach some a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make myself as credible as some football expert, but like that was something that popped off the screen that like
it like same team.
It just from a concept, like you had a hard time finding the rationale to, okay, where does Penn State make plays? Where do they flip the field? Where do they, yeah, where do they explode? Where do they break one open? Like you couldn't even build the logic because the ball wasn't getting into playmakers' hands and they weren't doing anything dynamic. Like it was just really, really bizarre, but we'll see what moves on or what
happens. It'd be one thing if their game plan totally went away from their running backs and they had some sort of dramatic downfield barrage of passing or, mm-hmm, but it wasn't any of that. It was just like so milquetoast that you just didn't know what in the world was going. Like it was almost like, hey, we've got the most plain uniforms in the world. Let's go with our game plan that way too.
Fair enough, huh? I hadn't thought about it that way. You had mentioned Wisconsin getting the win against Illinois. What was fascinating to me about this one is Wisconsin comes back. They score a touchdown with 27 seconds left to win the game, where Braden Locke connects with Nolan Rucci, a lineman. He finds the lineman for the game-winning touchdown to beat Illinois. It was an 18-point fourth quarter. So they headed into the fourth. Illinois was up 21-7 in this one. Wisconsin rattled off 18 points in that fourth, mm-hmm, quarter unanswered. But finding a lineman for the game-winning touchdown pass, to me, was the most Wisconsin and just about peak Big Ten football thing I had ever heard.
Mm-hmm. It's like back in the day scoring on a fumble Ruski or something and winning the game, or you know, that's totally something that you would see, or handing it off to somebody, a lineman that is lined up in the backfield or something. You know, you're right, that's totally so Big Ten-ish that, you know, hey, we won a ball game after trailing by 18 going into the, or by 14 going into the fourth, and you know what, doggone it, our lineman scored the winning touchdown.
it just like I didn't see that one live. I went back, was watching highlights, and I saw that, and I was like, number 93 caught that one, huh? Like, I started looking, I'm like, oh my god, like it just put a smile on my face. It was so good. But so that's a lot of what happened in the Big Ten this past weekend.
Well, and if you look, Braden Locke, 240 yards for Wisconsin. That's not the quarterback they brought in to throw the ball.
Correct. No, it's fair. He was able to make a big play. As we said, this upcoming weekend, there isn't necessarily a ton of intrigue in the games. We rattled them off earlier, but one of the teams on a bye, besides Iowa, that's got me sad. The other one is Michigan, and we were talking a little bit before we started the show. Obviously, it's a pretty big story. I think you had said you went to ESPN.com and on the college football page, it's the front
head page
thing. Yeah.
Head article. Yep.
We briefly talked about it last week, I believe. But the sign stealing accusation and the investigation put together by the NCAA, into the University of Michigan football program and what all was happening there. I mean, this has been a bit of, I'm not sure if saga is the right word, but like, every day this past week,
something
there has been new video evidence, new information. I mean, people are just pulling stuff together, and it has been kind of just incredible to observe and watch what all is taking place here. What do you take away from it to this point? Again, we still have plenty to learn. We still have to hear official things.
There have been, you know, NCAA investigators on the campus in Ann Arbor, mm-hmm. doing this, that, and the other thing, finding out more information. And trust me, by the time we're finding out about it, the NCAA already has a majority of the information. They're just slowly dispersing it, mm-hmm. which is damaging to a certain point. You should probably give us enough so we don't start wildly speculating about what things are going on, because there are plenty of Michigan fans, obviously, but non-Michigan fans that are like, just seems like they're picking on Michigan, mm-hmm. because you've got the hamburger or the cheeseburger story,
thank you for putting cheese on that burger there, Sam. Yeah. Away from ham to cheese.
The cheeseburger story, to where, you know, inappropriate interactions with recruiting or whatever, mm-hmm. and then you've got something else, and then you've got, oh hey, we've got an agreement to suspend Harbaugh for 4 games. Oh wait, no we don't. Oh wait, Michigan decided to suspend him so they can kind of cut it off at the pass. It's probably not going to matter once they actually investigate it. And then boom, we've got sign stealing. It's almost like they've just, so give us a little bit more, because mm-hmm. you and I just talking, you know, before we started, you gave me some information that I hadn't heard and seen. So I've changed my thought process a little bit. If it's as deep as you're saying, you know, you've read articles, mm-hmm. plenty more articles than me. If it's that deep, then yeah, it's an important thing to be talking about, to where they're using video, sending other random people to go video record so that, mm-hmm. not to bring up any red flags or whatever, but
still, and hang on, sorry for me to jump in. I should say all this allegedly, right. They're sending people to those games, but Connor Stallions, who's the man who has been accused of operating this scheme and vast network of scouting, is still writing checks in his name to people, or paying them on Venmo. All so right. It's like very right. public that it's all stemming from Connor Stallions. So that's what I mean. You kind of said like incognito, but like it's all coming right back to right. him and Michigan. But
here's the thing: is Michigan behind telling him to do that, or is he doing it rogue? You know, I mean,
well, and to me, we've seen now, like I said, I mean, the amount of stuff that's come out in the last couple of days, there could be a book on, like, and to me, like the idea that he went rogue, almost to me at this point, has to be thrown out the window because there are photos and videos of Stallions next to either the offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator, depending who has the ball. And he'll be staring over in game, staring over at the other sideline. And once he sees something, he'll whisper it into the coordinator's ear and they make a different call, like to their team out on the field. Like, it can't be rogue if he is that involved with
the passing that information off. Yeah.
And if the answer comes back from the staff that they say, well, we didn't know that's how he was getting the information. There probably should have been an antenna up somewhere along the way, right? Like, God, this Connor guy's kind of got this thing all figured out, huh?
Really good. Wow. We should. When there's smoke, there's fire. Come on. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. He very well may be a very, very intelligent man. But how do you know every single team's signs?
Yeah. So, like, to me, it's really fascinating. And then, like, you had Ross Dellinger, and I was telling you some of this, who's a really good writer covering college sports and just college business in general. He had a tweet yesterday that said, TCU coaches learn from other staffs about Michigan's elaborate sign stealing before the college football playoff semifinal. TCU changed signs but used dummy old signs to trick the Wolverines, coaches tell Yahoo Sports. TCU players were told to ignore the dummy signs. Michigan's scheme was so widespread among coaches that one told TCU staff before the game they have the most elaborate sign stealing in the history of the world. One TCU coach says in a quote, "You can see the sheet that Stallions is holding with our signs on them," end quote. And there have been photos with sheets. Now, people have, like, disputed whether it be, like, something that means something else rather than the other team's signs. But there you have a TCU coach directly saying that they had our signs on the sheet and we tricked them by going to the dummy stuff, which that is fascinating to me in terms of gamesmanship. And we kind of sat there during the college football playoff semifinal and we're like, what is going on with Michigan in this game? And that kind of points to some of it.
That's lazy work is what it is. Oh, we've got their signs. It's fine. We don't need to prepare. And then by halftime, they went, oh, wait, we should probably do something about this. And then they storm back and make it close.
I mean, how bizarre is this? And I was trying to find the other excerpt that I read from Ross Dellinger that really kind of like knocked me back a little bit. I couldn't find it there, but I believe this was tweeted by him that he talked with some anonymous coach that said, like, we all do sign stealing to a certain extent, right? Like that's part of the game. You're looking over whatever, or you try and study like what certain things mean, whatever. But his quote had said what Michigan's doing is next level expletive. I'll stop.
Here's my question, though. If you know that it's next level, why aren't you making a report of something? I mean, seriously, is it honor among men? You don't tattle, or what? Because this is, you understand that sign stealing is part of the game because it is. There is no rule against stealing somebody else's signs. There's rules against how you acquire that information. And so obviously, Michigan's going against the how. Why hasn't this been reported before now?
Well, and I kind of think it is what you just said. I think there's a certain code to this stuff. I mean, think about, too, before NIL, think about with college basketball. It was pretty widespread knowledge which coaches were cheating and doing things a little bit dirty. Yeah. Like, the public knew. Like, you know coaches knew, but nobody really threw anybody to the wolves because it's just not what you
kind of do. Everybody practices it to a point, so why poke the bear? Because if you poke the bear for one, it may poke the bear for all of them.
Well, and I think that rationale, I just think there's a code. Like, there's a little bit of like a militaristic, like a code to sports. And like, you know, we are kind of in this together, even though yada, yada, yada. You know what I mean? Like, I think there is something to that nature, but that's the best explanation I can think of. But like I said, a lot of that stuff was coming out yesterday. Who knows what comes out today? Every day there's been so much more information to this thing.
It makes the TCU Michigan playoff game a lot less surprising than.
Well, I mean, for that for that quote to come out where TCU is saying, yeah, somebody tipped us on to that they were having this elaborate sign stealing thing, so we used dummy signs. And we watched that game. We're like, what is going on? Like, Michigan is a more talented team. What is happening? Mm-hmm. It's because Michigan was playing a different game.
Well, it's because Michigan, like I said, got lazy and did no prep work for them to start out thinking, we've got their signs. We don't need to worry about what they've got on the field. We know what they're going to play, so we can put our guys in position to take it. And then all of a sudden, they had new signs in place that all of a sudden were, turned into a 21-point TCU lead, and Michigan had to go, oh, we should probably start playing now.
And to your point, like, if that's the case and that's how Michigan did it, how long has that been a thing where Michigan has only had to just take those signs and then do whatever? Like, this is really a fascinating story. It'll be interesting to see. But the part I do want to talk about here before we switch to basketball real quick, what's fascinating to me is, so what happens now? Because we have less than a month until the end of the regular season, and Michigan and Ohio State will be going into that game, maybe both 11-0, maybe both like 1-2 or 2-3 in the country. Like, this is a huge game that'll be taking place in just about a month. I don't believe you can do anything at this point, because let's say hypothetically the NCAA closed their investigation today and said we're punishing Michigan. Well, Michigan, as far as I've had it explained to me, would have 30 days to respond to this legally, where they could drag this thing out. So I don't see how at this point in the year anything can be done proactively against Michigan, like just from a technical legal aspect. Yep. I think this is all going to have to be retroactive punishment. So let's say Michigan goes through, they win the Big Ten, say they win it all. What does the NCAA do then? Do they just take it away about a month later once they're able to conclude their investigation and deal with all the court stuff? I mean, I'm really interested how this plays out, because I mean, we've seen vacated championships before, like the 2013 Louisville basketball team. We didn't know in the middle of their season. You know what I mean?
We had no idea during the Cardinals' run that they were going through what they were going through that was going to make them vacate.
Like, for Michigan
football, we know Michigan's doing that if they happen to win and they have to vacate. We know it's happening.
I was trying to think of the last time we've had that, where a team like went and won, and like, it's different even if Michigan has to vacate the last two Big Ten titles or whatever, or however all this shakes out.
Does that make Purdue a Big Ten champion?
I hadn't given that thought before. That's a good idea.
I'm getting t-shirts.
go ahead. But I it's different to take away those two, but we're in the middle of a season right now. Like, that part to me is fascinating as well, as what does happen. I'm also curious, how far does the NCAA go with their punishment? And the timetable of it to me is fascinating. But also, I'm interested, what about the Big Ten? There's a new commissioner in Tony Petitti. How does the Big Ten handle this? Are they unsatisfied with the punishment that comes from the NCAA? Do they open something up of their own? Like, how do we work through this? But certainly to me, it won't be happening in the next month, because I also believe, and I was talking with Bill Bender of the Sporting News, and he kind of opened my eyes to this. He's like, you realize, right? Like, it's going to be like number one, number two in the country, undefeated versus undefeated, and Ohio State, Michigan, big rivalry game. Like, that game will get 16 to 18 million viewers. And I was like, yep. Like, it's
general football fans will watch it.
Yeah, like it's going to be such a huge game that it, from a business financial perspective, and this sounds dirty, and maybe it is, it's not in the best interest to do anything in the next month. Now, from an integrity gamesmanship perspective, sure, it would be once you are able to conclude your findings. But like, that part to me is that dilemma is interesting.
Dalton, integrity and morality have gone out the window many years ago.
True.
So we know that the driving color is green, And if it can make money, we'll forgo a little bit of morality to be able to make a ton of money, which is what number one and number two or two and three, depending on computer rankings, will bring you when you've got two teams that are highly ranked like that. And it's unfortunate. And here's a question. Michigan, is there any way Michigan wins that and people don't think it's a dirty win?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think there's any way whatsoever that Michigan wins that game and people go, yeah, that was a good win by Michigan. It was what they steal, you know, it had to be because of their sign stealing. Because believe it or not, up until the sign stealing was allegedly started, Ohio State ruled Michigan. And then all of a sudden, boom, they started winning and dominating. And it was right around the time the sign stealing was allegedly started and was in full play.
You're right.
And there are videos of Stallions being on the sideline during an Ohio State Michigan game.
Yep. Yep. And standing next to the coordinators, as we said, correct, like part of the operation. Yep. Yeah. There's going to be a heavy cloud just of doubt that will follow any success that Michigan has this year.
I was going
to
say, I don't know that Michigan can do anything this year without people going, yeah, that was dirty.
Yeah. Period. No, I think you're right.
And it doesn't matter what comes out in the findings. It does not matter. We know that our society has changed enough that you're guilty until proven innocent now. And even then, once you're proven innocent, you still got that dark cloud hanging over you.
Yeah.
And no, I'm saying Michigan's innocent. I'm just saying they're guilty because they've been accused in the court of public opinion. Yep. So doesn't matter. They could come out free and clean in this whole thing, and they beat Ohio State. There's going to be a contingency, a big contingency, saying they stole it.
It really is a fascinating story.
And it is.
We'll end up talking about it for weeks because it's continuing on. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a point of discussion for a while.
At least it's for, you know, overshadowing Harbaugh rumors, other than I do think he's going to the NFL now because of all this mess.
He needs to get away from the mess now.
Honestly, does he want this headache? You don't have these headaches as much. Now, don't get me wrong. If you steal signs and stuff in the NFL, yeah, you're going to get in trouble. But there's a lot less headaches when it comes to the formality of, you know, what you have to do and what you can and can't do in the NFL. I think he's been flirting so hard with the NFL over the years. I think this is just pushing him to the end.
And again, he wouldn't be the first coach to make a mess at his university and then flee to the NFL. CC Pete Carroll. Like,
yeah.
Everybody just kind of forgets about everything.
Or vice versa and see Nick Saban.
Yeah. Yeah.
Miami's just now recovering from that.
So real quick, I do want to bring up, I think you have a bit of a problem, Sam.
Oh, of course I do.
Do you have, unless you have a two TV setup, I think you got an issue.
Okay. What's my issue?
Saturday.
Purdue play at the same time.
That's right. Purdue football and Purdue men's basketball. Both are playing at the same time. Purdue football's on the road at Nebraska. I know you got your answer, but hang on for 1 second. Yep. They kick at 3:30. Meanwhile, Purdue basketball in an exhibition is on the road at number 14, Arkansas. It is a 4:00 tip. That one's going to be on SEC Plus, that broadcast for the SEC basketball plus? Game. Yeah.
I don't have the plus.
Yeah.
Unless it's part of the extras. Like, okay. So my satellite provider allows me picture in picture to where I can watch four games all at once. So yes, I can.
Oh, you got the quad box. Yes, okay.
I do. And so I can watch four things. So I'll definitely be able to watch both Purdue games at the same time if I so choose to do so. But I don't, I've got the SEC network, but you know how they have those extras that go along with it. I don't know if that's one of them that Purdue will be on.
It's a good question because Big Ten Plus is an extra subscription, right? And that's beside the Big Ten network. Yeah. So I'm probably not going to be able to watch it. You listen to Rod Blackman and company on the radio.
Yeah. Is he basketball or is he going to be at the football game?
That's actually a great question.
He does both of them.
Yeah. He does sideline for football because Tim Newton does play by play for football radio. That's a great question.
I know Rod Blackman is there on football game. So I'm wondering if he's the call, he goes to basketball and they put somebody else on the sideline then.
I'm one of the, like, I'm so nerdy where that now, like, to find out what they're going to do with their radio like personnel. No, it, maybe, but, like, that's also one of the most exciting storylines to the weekend for me, because we talked about, again, the slate is so bad. Yeah. Like, that's more exciting than some of the football games to me right now for the weekend. So we'll have to figure out what happens with the Purdue broadcast. But nonetheless, basketball season, the exhibition season, I see you pointing. Do you, go ahead.
I wanted to go back to the football week real quick. Of the five Big Ten games, you've got the listing, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which one is the cheapest and which one's the most expensive to go see on the aftermarket?
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go with the cheapest game being Maryland-Northwestern.
Okay, and what do you think the most expensive one is?
The most expensive will be Minnesota-Michigan State.
Okay, so to go see Maryland and Northwestern, $2. So
you are correct. Yes.
You Let's are correct go. On that.
Let's go.
The most expensive one is Ohio State at Wisconsin at $27.
Okay.
Minnesota or Michigan State at Minnesota, $22.
Oh, so I wasn't too far off.
You weren't too far off.
I thought Minnesota. Go ahead. I was going to say, I thought Minnesota fans, maybe I was capturing the momentum of them getting both Floyd and the Axe, and they're all excited. They're going to
go ahead. For the trophy against Michigan State?
No.
Okay. No. So they're just on a trophy high that you figure, you know, they're wanting to call, come out and see them play.
First time since 1993, they've had both those trophies at their place.
Wow.
It's been 30 years.
Wow. First time in your lifetime. Wow.
Yeah, actually. Yeah.
So Purdue, Nebraska, $11 and IU, Penn State, $10. So you can still go see under $30 for all these games.
Okay.
Of course, that's not the travel, but.
You're right.
It's more expensive to do that, but go ahead. Let's jump to basketball.
Secret, there's hidden super fees secret, yes. in this weekend football.
Secret scrimmages
that are now not so secret. Yeah. Like we said, Purdue's at number 14, Arkansas. That's on Saturday. Also this Sunday, Michigan State hosts number 9, Tennessee. That's a top 10 matchup you're getting for an exhibition. They made it a public game, and the proceeds are going to the tragedy that was experienced in Maui. So many great programs across the country are giving back to Maui because so many great programs play in that Maui Invitational.
Did they move the Maui Invitational to stateside, or are they still doing it in Maui?
I believe they're still doing it in Maui. Okay. I believe they are.
Because I know during COVID, they moved it to stateside so they didn't have to travel across the ocean, but they didn't they?
Yes, but from the understanding I have, like, Maui obviously really got rocked, but, like, part of it that didn't get touched was right by the arena.
Oh, okay, like, good. Well, good for that aspect to where they can still bring in the tourism to build, bolster the economy there.
Yeah, so I believe it's going to be there, but we'll see. Maybe there's new information, but I believe it's still going to be there. But nonetheless, like, we're hungry for good basketball. I know you and I both are. And this weekend, even though it's an exhibition, like, these are going to be some good games.
Oh, for sure. And like you said, they're going to be games. They're not, a lot of times scrimmages are, you know, basically a glorified practice, but like with these big ones here, you know, more than likely it's going to be, you know, referee, you know, it's an actual game. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't count on your record, which is nice in case you stumble, but even then stumbling's okay, you know? So yeah. I'm excited to see Purdue back in action and with the new pieces that they've got. And I think that's what the big thing about these scrimmages are, is you see the new pieces being added for the first time during a game that doesn't get recorded. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's learning out, feeling out that first game for those freshmen or those red shirts or, you know, certain transfers that come in or, you know, whatever it is, you know, that growth from freshman to sophomore year. Those are the things that get checked out during the scrimmage and get you even more excited. And that's why I'm really pumped about it.
Yeah, no, I definitely am too. And by the way, next week, we'll have to preview a little bit of Big Ten basketball because November 6th, which is not this upcoming Monday, but the Monday after, is when the season tips off. So we are we are closing in quickly. We're
almost in the throes of a double season.
So I'm really excited. We've been talking about, again, Big Ten football just hasn't been as exciting maybe as in years past, because it feels like we almost know every result before the games kick off.
Minus the Iowa games.
Kind of, yeah. Oh, well, that's why I'm intrigued. I'm like, hey, I don't know what's going to happen here. I love that. But
very
yeah,
few basketball, surprises this year.
Basketball is going to be a lot of fun, and I know we both have a pretty big passion for it. So
show.
That will close out another edition of Big Talk. Sam, on the way out the door, you want to let everybody know where they can find us?
Yes, on the TikToks, the Instagrams, and the platform formerly known as the Twitter. It is at B1G underscore talk. That's B1G, not B-I-G, Dalton, B1G underscore talk, Big Talk. You go to Facebook, it's B1G talk. It's Big Talk, not all Big Talk. You know this. We've been through this, but I still need to reiterate to you because sometimes you forget. But it's B1G, not B-I-G, and it's Big Talk, not all Big Talk on Facebook. We stream every week on the ASAP network, and you can find us streamed on their multiple different platforms there through them. Then later in the day through Lounge Media Group, and starting soon, hopefully, Lounge Media Group Radio as well. If you want to see our video stream and you missed it on ASAP, go to Spotify and find our video there.
Very good. Very good. So that'll do it for another episode of Big Talk. I'm Dalton Scheller. That's Sam Sprunger. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for another episode. And until next week, so long, everybody.
See ya.